It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's episode of the Nick Baugh Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. When it's time to get some new windows or a new door, you gotta go with Pella. Why? Well, because they can provide window and door solutions to any home, and because the people are fantastic. And you know what else is fantastic? Knowing that you're gonna be working with Pella and those fantastic folks with Pella, and only Pella the entire time. Do you realize when you go to some other window companies, all of a sudden questions pop up like, well, who's going to install it? Who's going to pre-finish it? They're like, well, nah, you got to talk to them. No, that you got to holler at them. And now you got to give that person a call. Before you know it, you work with like four or five different people. Ugh, massive headache. You want the convenience and simplicity of working with one company, not three or four. That's Pella. Check them out on the web, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Baugh Podcast is brought to you by my friends at Runza. You guys know I was a quarterback in high school, but you know I believe, totally believe in establishing the run game. And even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original cheeseburger, onion rings, double dipped in homemade batter, maybe a little bit of pop to top it off that's ice cold. You know, in football, you establish the run. Well, at lunch or dinner, you establish the Runza. It's that simple. Get to Runza today and get yours and tell him your friend Nick Baugh sent you. Well, welcome back to another edition of Husker Classic Recaps. And this is a game that unfortunately left a pretty big scar in a lot of Husker fans' hearts. But it's one of those games where you cannot tell the story and tell the complete tale that is Nebraska football without getting into this game. Nebraska, Texas, 2009 Big 12 championship game. No shortage of storylines, just an amazingly drama-filled game. You have the infamous 1 second at the end of the game that gets put back onto the clock. We all know all the heartache that goes into that. This was amazing to sit down and rewatch it and go through all the heartache all over again. Watch the domination of Ndamukong Suh, just absolutely pummeling Colt McCoy. Watch how good that 2009 Blackshirts group was. There's just watching this game was really eye-opening in a lot of different ways, and there's a lot to talk about it. So this is a really fun discussion. You guys are really going to enjoy it. So let's get to it. Husker Classic Recaps. We got the Big 12 Championship Game, 2009, number 22, Nebraska versus number 3, Texas. Enjoy. You know, the difference between pain and joy is usually pretty big. But in sports, you can seesaw back and forth between those two feelings. And let's be honest, that's what we love about sports. It's what we love about being a fan. The roller coaster of emotions is what makes you feel alive. The highest of highs and the lowest of lows, all wrapped into one experience. Not much else in life can give you that. And I'm not sure there was a greater example of all that than what unfolded in one Nebraska football game in 2009. 1 second. In life, there isn't necessarily much that can happen in just 1 second. But in sports, a lot can happen. On a December night in Arlington, Texas, 1 second kept a national championship alive for one team and snatched a conference championship trophy away from another. Validated all the frustration from one fan base, Nebraska's, about another program in Texas. Spoiled arguably the greatest individual defensive performance in Nebraska football program history. Provided joy and relief to one sideline and anger and sadness to the other. And maybe most importantly, proved to be a pivotal turning point in one man's tenure as head coach at Nebraska. All that happened in 1 second. Football is a game of inches. Well, it turns out it's also a game of seconds. This is Husker Classic recaps. The 2009 Big 12 Championship game. Number 22, Nebraska taking on number 3, Texas. Bo Rude is here. I think we watched this game together, didn't we?
We did.
I can't remember where we were at, but I'm 99% sure that we were watching this game together.
I think we were. Yeah, we were. And I think it might have been at when you lived in Omaha.
That makes sense. Obviously, in 2009, I would have been that would have been the first year the Schick and Nick Show would have been in Omaha. And this game, you know, we've already done a loss, right? You know, we did the 1983 Miami Orange Bowl loss. Ozzie going
go
for two.
Yep.
This game is, you know, I've said ultimately I think that was probably the most devastating loss in Nebraska football history. This one was devastating, but for different reasons in rewatching it. This one was fun because it's by far, it's the most recent game we have on our slate of Husker Classic recaps. But this one was, it's amazing. Again, I urge everybody to go find these games on YouTube and watch them because I'm amazed at how all the emotions come rushing back to you, even though you know the outcome. Good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different from the first loss in the sense of the story. The story leading up to it is night and day different. In 1983, this was about Osborne trying to win his first title. The greatest team to ever play was just had to just finish off an unbelievable run of 20 some straight wins. This was a different moment for Nebraska. This is more recent. Nebraska had taken their first fall, like their first fall from grace. The Callahan era came and went, and Pelini was sort of the savior to rebuild the program.
No doubt.
He had just basically, he was completing his rebuild and our chance to get back to winning and being on top. So that's the difference in the stories. Not even close. Very, very different situations, but definitely has Nebraska's heartstrings both times.
So I think it's important. One thing we try to do each time is like frame the game on a variety of levels, where each program was at, where each team was at within their season. I think I want to do that because I think it's interesting when you look back, especially on Nebraska's 2009 season, quite a season. So real quick, let's get Texas out of the way. So they're ranked third. They were undefeated. They had a Heisman candidate in Colt McCoy at quarterback. McCoy ended up finishing third in the Heisman voting behind Mark Ingram and Toby Gerhart. Texas ranked, this is a really good Texas team. They ranked third in scoring offense. And actually the Texas defense, it's a really good Texas defense. Number one rush D in the country. Number three in total defense. Actually higher ranked than Nebraska's defense in both those individual categories. So this is a good Texas team that Nebraska has taken on. The 2009 season for Nebraska. So Nebraska's went 9-3 in the regular season. So they're coming in having 9-3. Remember, they lost at Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech was that was an unbelievable game. A terrible loss for us, but that was the standout for me that season.
In some ways, that kind of set the tone for the game, or for the season, excuse me. Like, just where the defense was going to be off the charts good, the offense just not. And it's weird, in a lot of ways, that game was very similar in a lot of ways to how this Texas game played out. But so, really there are three losses. They lost at Virginia Tech 16-15. They got beat bad at home by Texas Tech, 31-10.
Yeah.
And then they lost to Iowa State in Lincoln, 9-7.
The fumble game.
The eight turnover day by the offense. Eight turnovers. And Nebraska loses 9-7. But think about that. That's their only three losses. They had to piss away a game at Virginia Tech. And they had what is still, in my lifetime, one of the most bizarre, fluky football games I've ever seen in the Iowa State game at home with the eight turnovers.
For sure. And they just didn't play well against Texas Tech. I remember they just didn't show up that
day,
right? Didn't have it. But, I mean, you know, we'll talk about this maybe later, but this team, the potential that defense actually had.
You look
back at Nebraska's, out of their last 10 seasons, you could have taken a lot of different one of those offenses and put it on that team. And we're talking about national championship caliber potential. But with the offense that we did have, we'll get into that.
Yeah, more, but no, you're totally right. The Nebraska defense, and we'll get more into where they – I mean, it's so hard to rank defenses historically in a program. But, like, I don't know, in rewatching this game, I'm hard-pressed to not say this isn't one of the five best defenses to ever in the history of Nebraska football.
And the hard part is – if you're only watching this game, I mean, the rest of the season may not have. I mean, this was their shining,
their best
moment.
Game. But
this was their moment.
They were number one in the country in scoring defense. They gave up 10 points per game. Think about the games I said where they lost. Nebraska, the defense lost a game where they gave up 9 points, 13 points, and 16 points. Think about that. You know? So the defense gave up 10 points or less in 8 games.
Yeah.
And they were obviously led by one of the greatest individual seasons from a defensive player in college football history, and Sue. Sue finished fourth in the Heisman voting that's this season. And if Nebraska has just a serviceable offense, you're talking about a team that could have won a national championship, in my opinion. Just a serviceable one. This offense was really bad. They were 75th in scoring offense, 25 points per game. The offense scored 17 points or less 6 different occasions. And they just never... What's weird, and we'll get more into this, but what's weird is they actually had pretty good skill players. Like,
not bad.
Your two running backs are Roy Helu and Rex Burkhead. Your wide receivers, your top two guys are Niles Paul and Brandon Kinney. Both those guys aren't bad players.
Niles is good.
Niles is a good player. Yeah. Your tight end is Mike McNeil. Not a bad player.
He's a pro caliber player.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the issue was just never had good, consistent quarterback play the entire year. The two quarterbacks were Zach Lee and Cody Green. Zach Lee started 12 games. Cody Green actually started 2 games. And that ended up being their biggest issue, I'd say, is they didn't have a consistent, serviceable QB. And then on top of all of that, they had arguably the best field goal kicker in the country in Alex Henry.
Yeah. So they had it where they needed it other than a couple positions that really mattered. I mean, and Zach's a really good guy. Just, yeah. You know, it's just that's kind of the nature of it, is like when you're playing at the highest level for the biggest prizes, like, you know, it's tough. I don't know. I don't want to, like, I never want
to
say.
Yeah, you don't want to say anything disparaging and drag someone through the mud, but it's like, he didn't, I mean, yeah, it is what it is. They weren't, I mean, I'm just giving you stats. You know what I mean? It's like,
and you watch the game and it wasn't great, right?
So, I will say, and we'll get into watching the game here in a second because there's so many amazing things that happen. Like, rewatching this game, I would say the defense was even better than I remembered, and I think the offense was worse than
remembered. That stood out. I remembered how good the defense was. The offense, I didn't remember being that bad.
Real quick, before we get into the game, I think it's important because you have the infamous Bo Pelini after this game. The BCS! That's why they make that call. This is when the BCS era, where there's a mathematical formula that spits out who's going to play for a national championship. It's different. So heading into the game, the BCS rankings were Florida was number one, Bama was number two, Texas was number three, TCU was fourth, and Cincinnati was fifth. Now, Alabama had beat Florida earlier in the day in the SEC title game. So it was the path was clearing. If Texas wins, it's simple math, and the path is there for Bama, Texas, in the national championship game.
It's clean.
It's clean. It's easy. Clean. No one's going to argue with it. Everyone's happy, right?
Yep.
And even Kirk Herbstreit and Brent Musburger on the call, and they kind of lead the game talking about this. If Texas loses this game, it is total BCS chaos. Because I don't even know...
And TCU, remember, they're Big 12 now. They were not... Power five.
I wrote that down. You have to remember TCU was still in the Mountain West, and Cincinnati was in the Big East.
Mm-hmm.
This was when the Big East was still playing football.
Yep.
So Texas and Florida would have both been 12-1. TCU and Cincy, as we said, they're in group of five conferences. It'd have been total chaos, right? It'd have been total and complete chaos. So that's kind of setting the stage here. But I think it was pretty clear what, if there ever was like a game plan that's simple, Nebraska needed to control the clock in this game, run the ball, win field position. don't make mistakes. Let their give their defense a chance to kind of lead the way.
Yeah.
And Nebraska, keep in mind, Nebraska had 14 takeaways in the last five games heading into this one. So this defense was rolling. They were peaking and they were rolling heading into this thing. Yeah. And in those five games, the defense had allowed 10 points, 3 points, 17 points, 3 points, and 20 points.
What week was the Missouri game at Missouri?
That would have been probably week four or something like that. Week three or four. I don't have
it. It was a little later in the season. Let me see. I'm trying to find that schedule. Let's see. It is the Missouri was. Oh, it's the fifth week. So it was in October. I felt like as soon as they got to that Missouri game, Ndamukong Suh became a household name.
Yep.
That was his sort of coming out party, like nationally, where I think he went from a star to a superstar in college football. And then I feel like, we laid two eggs in a row after that, but then I thought we were. We played our best football after we laid those two eggs. But Suh became a household name. We laid two eggs, and then then we're rolling after that.
Totally. I mean, but you're right, though. That Missouri game kind of put Suh on the map for that season. Okay, we ready? Here we go. Toe meet leather, Big 12 championship, 2009. Here we go. Texas gets the football first. On their first drive, third play of the game, Pierre Allen tips the ball at the line of scrimmage, and it gets intercepted by Eric Haig. And I think so often when you're playing the role of spoiler, you need to kind of set the tone early.
Yeah.
And that felt like a tone-setting play. You got a Heisman candidate quarterback. You're putting pressure on him. Ball gets tipped. Interception, Eric Haig.
Keeping it deflected. Could be intercepted. It is picked off at the 40-yard line. The deflection sent it up in the air. And Nebraska with the first turnover of the game as Eric Haig comes down with it. A junior corner from Arizona.
And give Pierre Allen, the defensive end, a lot of credit. This Nebraska defensive line, this is exactly what they have to do. If you can't get penetration and get to Colt McCoy, knock the ball down. And that time, Allen did that. And a very, very good job of being aware by Haig to come up with a crucial interception for Nebraska.
The Nebraska takes over. Good field possession at the Texas 41. And there's already so many interesting things that happen here. Nebraska gets to 4th-and-1. And I don't remember them doing this very much, if at all. Remember, they bring in Suh at fullback on 4th-and-1, and they run an ISO with Burkhead, with Suh as the lead blocker. Rex gets stuffed at the line of scrimmage, and they say he's short, but the refs review the spot and change it, which I think it probably is the right call because Rex kind of spun off a guy. He was laying on top of a guy.
Yeah, it was the right call. Yeah.
It was the right call. He gets awarded a first down, and Nebraska then goes 3-and-out after that, but all that matters in getting into field goal range for Alex Henry. 45-yard field goal for Mr. Henry. Good. Nebraska up 3-0. Next drive, Texas, 3-and-out, punt. Then Nebraska takes over. On 2nd-and-9, Zach Lee has a really bad throw looking for Niles Paul right down the middle and drifts him towards the middle of the field. The safety comes over, picks it, setting a tone in a negative way for the turnovers for Nebraska. Texas then takes over. Ndamukong Suh, and you can just see it right away.
Yeah.
The pressure and the menacing approach from those front four, in particular Suh, is prevalent right away.
Yeah, he gets his first sack there in like the first two drives.
Yes.
And you could just feel that it was going to be a long night for that offensive line and for Colt McCoy.
No doubt. So Suh sacks McCoy on first down, and then they get Texas into third down, and you have a great interception from Prince Amukamara.
Five defensive backs. McCoy waits, near side, intercepted, picked off. That is the second interception. Amukamara. And now you talked about the Horns. Well, the Cornhuskers, with these two, they now have 18 interceptions on the season.
Shipley is his primary receiver. Watch Shipley off the ball. Colt McCoy on third down wants to get the football to him, but even if he did, he's covered. Look at the coverage and the recognition right now by Nebraska's defense. It's almost as if they're in the huddle with Texas and they know what's coming every time Colt McCoy goes back to throw.
Along the right sideline, they wanted to get it to Shipley. Some of the all 22 high replays they showed, I was, as much as we talk about Sue, and he was great, the back seven and their coverage with Gomes, Hag, Prince, Dennard, Philip Dillard, there was nowhere to throw the football.
I mean, that's where, you know, watching this, you see some of those sacks from Sue, and he had time to kind of do what he wanted,
right?
Because those guys were matching routes. It was like they were gloved up. I mean, Gomes was essentially playing linebacker the whole game. Like, he was in that. They must have been dime and nickel the whole. I don't think I saw two linebackers in there, like two real linebackers.
Right.
It was Dillard, and Gomes was in the box the whole day. So, yeah, I mean, we were ready to match routes. And you, like you said, you start looking at those names, and you go, Gomes, Dennard, Mukamara,
Hag,
and then O'Hanlon and Asante. Like, people forget O'Hanlon and Asante. O'Hanlon was playing his best football of his career that season. And Asante, you know, he played five or six years pro. You know, like,
right.
You forget about Asante and O'Hanlon, but, like, you had six guys that could all really play.
Yes. And so I just, the coverage was incredible. And Prince's in particular, blankets a guy, picks it. And so here it is. In the first three drives of the game, Nebraska's got two interceptions. So Nebraska takes over at the Texas 43. You're going to hear this a lot. Nebraska goes three and out. They try to go play action on third and one. Zach Lee gets flushed. He throws it away. And setting up Alex Henry from 52 yards, field goal, good.
And here it is. 52-yard attempt. Remember I told you, he's hit a 57-yarder. He whacks it. Looks like he's got it. Brilliant.
So Nebraska's now up 6-0 at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, but it's also, here's my issue with this, okay? They start out the game, we take it away from them twice, and we're on their side of the field. Like, this is time to score some points, right?
Yes.
This is where you got to capitalize. You got to get a touchdown one of those two times. To me, it's not acceptable to take two field goals there. You can talk a lot about what happened in this game. Not being able to take advantage of those two turnovers, like, those are shot downs. Those are like, this is time to go score, you know?
And totally agree. And there's going to be something that happens in the fourth quarter too, where for as much as we're going to talk about the 1 second thing and all that stuff, like, Nebraska had opportunities for it to never come down to that field goal. They did. I mean, we've already first quarter, two picks, great field position, and to not come away with 7 points on any of them is disappointing. So, and then let me take it a step further. Early in the second quarter, Nebraska stops Texas. Texas comes out to punt, and the punt is blocked by Eric Martin. Eric Martin gets in there. They were doing the rugby style, and Eric Martin's able to get a paw up. He blocks it. So Nebraska now has two turnovers and a blocked punt. Like, this is like, if you're just, like, they are checking all the boxes of what they need to do to win this game.
I think there's, like, stats. If you block a punt, you win it. Like, it's like an 80% clip. Like, things like that, like, all those things that we're doing equal wins.
Yes. Yes. And so, and this is where it, first interesting moment here offensively. So after the block punt, Nebraska takes over at the Texas 37. The very first play, and some people subscribe to this, any sort of big play, sudden change, some coordinators and people want to take a shot, yeah. Right? Well, Sean Watson decide they want to take a shot. They go play action, deep pass to Niles Paul from Zach Lee. Intercepted.
Corey Heller back in as the I-back. play fake, and Zach is going to throw it. Going to go for it right after the block punt. Paul battle end zone, intercepted. Picked off by Williams. Aaron Williams, his third interception of the season. He picks it off, and it'll come out on the 20-yard line.
So, again, it's funny we're already getting into this conversation. Hindsight is 20/20, but there could be an argument to be made of what we're saying where it's like, I wonder if Bo Pelini and Sean Watson thought this Texas offense, top five scoring offense, like they're going to put points on the board. We can't be kicking field goals. We have to score. But at the same time, when you have a kicker like Alex Henry and a defense like Nebraska's, anytime you're kind of like in field goal range, I don't want to say go into total play it safe mode, but man, like, because with how automatic Henry was, like you were probably gonna kick a field goal and get 3 points out of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just my thing was this, like the two interceptions they had, like it wasn't, they didn't make good plays. We made bad plays. That's my problem with our interceptions. Like we did not have a good necessarily play call for what they were doing. Like they had guys in position and we threw it up to them. Right. Like
right.
Those aren't good picks. I think a good pick is if like some guy goes up and makes a great play, but you have, you know, like a 1-on-1 or a, you know, if it gets tipped, it gets tipped. Right. That those are ones I kind of go, meh. But like when you throw it into double coverage a couple times, like we did, like
right.
That to me is that's on play callers and quarterbacks.
Totally. And so, you know, I guess but that's a wind out of your sails. I mean, because like,
yes.
You know, you have two picks, you just blocked a punt, and on the very first play, you throw an interception and give it right back to Texas.
Yeah.
So, again, these opportunities for Nebraska are kind of coming and going.
Yeah.
For whether even to score touchdowns or just score points, period. So, again, just I can't even begin to. So Texas on their next drive, they did pick up a first down, but then Nebraska stuffs them on 3rd and 2, and the ability to get pressure with just the front four is like I keep on writing down. Wow, this defense. I mean, they are completely dominating Texas right now.
3rd down and 2, McCoy rolling to the right. With Sue coming up at the end of that play. You can see number 93 was closing in and Gomes again.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, Colt McCoy is a Heisman candidate. This is like a high-flying offense, high-scoring offense, and they are just shutting these dudes down.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that defensive front four. You got, remember, Crick next to Sue is a huge help to Sue. And then
Turner
and Pierre Allen are both solid players. You know, both got that good, long, athletic bodies. And you know, and those guys, they both had great games.
Yes.
I mean, these guys were all playing their best football. And that was what this I really took away was it looked like everybody was firing in all cylinders. Phil Dillard looked good. He looked like he was – Phil, you know, these are guys I played with all these guys. So these – you know, I'm a 2007. Right. These guys are 09. So these are all the young guys that came up that were, you know, on the team with me. I know all these guys well. And they're all solid players. But none of these guys were those players a couple – they all
sure.
developed. They all – Sue is a guy that really developed. I mean, Sue, we knew Sue. This guy is big and he's strong, but he didn't know how to play. And Pelini taught him how to play. Pelini taught a lot of these guys how they needed to play. And it's so impressive to see these guys when they were at their best. They were as good as anybody in the country.
No, and you bring up a good point where, like, some defenses, like I feel like the – you know, we did the 94 Miami game in the Orange Bowl. I thought the black shirts in that game, it was just – they just, like – kicked Miami's ass. Like, they just physically beat them up.
Yeah.
I thought this defensive performance was a combination of just overpowering and then what it looks like when everybody's doing their job. Everybody knows exactly what to do.
So this is where I would give this team more credit than any of the other Nebraska teams like that we've been talking about. This team was as solid in terms of your assignment, do your job, and tackle. Like, we didn't miss many tackles.
No.
And so I wouldn't say it was as physical as some of those other games, but Sue was the most physical guy on the field, and that's where Sue was the powerhouse on his own, throwing people around, ragdolling the quarterback. But everybody else, I mean, they were executing really, really well.
That's the thing. I'd love to, at the end, I bet you could count on one hand the amount of blown assignments or plays where they didn't execute what they were supposed to do.
And not many missed tackles.
No.
You know, I mean, watching the 78 game last week, we missed a lot. We couldn't tackle Billy Sims sometimes.
No.
You know, we played tough, but, you know, we missed a lot of tackles too. Part of that is the nature of the game, I think. But, you know, we tackled well.
Tackled well. Assignments were on point. Execution on point. It's amazing. So Texas has to punt. Nebraska goes 3-and-out, loses yards, has to punt. I mean, Nebraska's offense is full-fledged awful right now.
And I think we should point out, the best player we have on that team is Rex Burkhead, but not this year. He's a freshman. Rex Burkhead in 2 and 3 years is the best player that's come out of that nucleus, right?
Right.
Rex is our guy. But at the time, Roy was better than him. And, I mean, Roy just didn't really have a whole lot of room to get much going.
Was that offensive line not very good?
I think they were serviceable, but so
I mean, they were the number one rush D in the country. They were, I think, third in scoring defense. Like, this wasn't just like a pushover bad Big 12 defense. This was one of the best defenses in the country that was crushing Nebraska's offense. I'm just saying, like, it's just interesting, though, because, again, like, you on paper, like, I guess on paper, outside of the quarterback position, you wouldn't think this offense would be necessarily this bad.
Texas
is making them look really bad.
Yeah, I mean, Texas had some, they got some big guys. Sergio Kendall was, you know, he was like, you know, preseason All-American.
Acho.
Earl Thomas. I remember Earl Thomas is on that, in that secondary. Like, names like that, you go, oh, fuck, Earl Thomas was there? Right, so they had, you know, a ton of talent on their team, too. But, you know, I don't think we had a lot of, we didn't have anybody that's just like, just give him the ball and get out of the way type of guy. We didn't really have that.
Right, because Rex was a year away from that. And even Roy was, because, I mean, Roy comes back the next year. I mean, they're both underclassmen.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Roy has the 300-yard rushing game in 2010.
Yeah, Roy,
you know?
Like, Roy was better the next year.
And so was Rex. And like,
I just think that, like, you know, and Zach Lee, like I said, his game was just basically, he was out there, manage the game, don't make mistakes. But he wasn't going to beat you with his legs. He's not going to really throw it all over the field. He's a game manager. That's what he's there to do. And, you know, he has to play within himself. The only thing you could ask him to do more than what he did was just don't turn it over as much. And so that's the part where coaches get mad. And we'll see later when Pelini kind of, you can tell he was he was having thoughts. But, you know, Zach really, like, we don't want to crap on Zach because Zach was doing exactly what they were telling him to do, which is just manage the game.
Right. Totally. So Nebraska then, like I said, loses yard, has to punt, and Texas has good field position for the first time. They take over at the Nebraska 42, and I would say Colt McCoy started to kind of settle in. Like, right at the end of the second quarter, Colt kind of found a rhythm, but I think some of it also was like he's under duress and he's making a throw into a tight window. So Colt makes a couple of pretty good throws. They're driving down. Texas gets into the red zone. Then on 3rd and 13, there's a pass interference call on Eric Hag in the end zone. And this happens later in the game, too, where Hag didn't turn around to the ball. He's blanketed a receiver, but he doesn't turn around to make a play on the ball. So it's pass interference in the end zone. The ball gets placed at the 4-yard line. So now it's 1st and goal at the 4. Colt McCoy has a little 4-yard quarterback draw, touchdown. So you have a 9-play, 42-yard touchdown drive. So after all of that, 2 interceptions, defense ball, and blocked punt, Nebraska's down 7-6 at halftime.
That's what felt so bad about that first half is we're down and we played that good. Like, we deserve to be up substantially with the way we played, and it's just too bad. It's just too bad we couldn't capitalize.
Because that's what's so interesting. Like, you sit there and go, everything Nebraska did about everything they could, and they're still trailing. And so, I mean, it was, you think about at half here, at 7-6 Texas, total domination from both defenses, really. Like,
yeah,
in particular, Nebraska's. I mean, what this black shirt group is doing is incredible. Neither offense can do much, especially Nebraska's offense. So Nebraska's offense in the second quarter had 10 offensive plays for -1 yard. Their longest play from scrimmage for that half was 7 yards, and it was the first play of the game, a little handoff to Helu. Nebraska had 32 total yards in the first down and only had 2 first downs.
That's just bad.
Yikes, I mean,
that's just
right?
Bad.
Texas hadn't done much either, obviously. Colt McCoy did kind of get it going, like I said, at the end of the second quarter.
Yeah, and Colt, I mean, you got to remember Colt, too. He's a 4-year starter. You know, he's a 4-year starter.
He's got 40 plus wins coming into this game. I mean, like,
it's really, you know, he's a good enough player that even with the way we were, you know, slamming him around, and he was good enough that, like, he made some good throws and good decisions to get those yards and to get some first downs,
right,
too, you know?
So, Nebraska, Colt McCoy was 6 of 9 for 70 yards in the second quarter, but Nebraska has 4 sacks in the first half. So, here we go with the second half. Third quarter kicks off. Nebraska, first drive, they get to 3rd and 1, they get stuffed, they have to punt. Texas has to punt on their first possession. Then Nebraska's second drive of the third quarter, it's 3rd and 10, and Zach Lee's pass gets tipped at the line of scrimmage, popped up into the air, intercepted by Texas.
Yeah.
And this is when Pelini starting to get upset.
Yeah.
And at this point, cut to the sideline, Cody Green is starting to warm up.
Yeah, I think was this the drive where Pelini had words for Zach after the pick?
Okay. And yeah, Zach comes off and Bo's kind of giving it to him. Not like he did.
He's
to
not
Taylor.
Losing his mind, but
I would say Bo was way, all the cutaways to Bo that were less than I remembered. The only time he really lost it was at the very end.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he got upset with a couple pass interference calls, but like a lot of coaches get upset at that, you know?
Yeah, but he wasn't losing his mind, but he was talking to his quarterback. Basically, you could tell it was one of those things like, are you going to get this together? Like,
right.
where are you at? And you know, Zach was kind of like, all right, you know,
you tell,
like,
Zach right. was a little rattled. And so Cody Green, they give Cody Green the word. Cody Green's starting to warm up. But meanwhile, Texas takes over at the Nebraska 32. Here we go. Buckle your chin straps. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking defensive stand from this group. Wow. Nebraska forces a 3-and-out. And on 3rd down, Matt O'Hanlon sacks Colt McCoy on 3rd and 6 for a 12-yard loss, pushing them out of field goal range. And at
pushing
this point,
them back. Yeah.
Pushed them. I mean, at this point, the defense is walking off the field like, I mean, we are killing these guys.
Yeah.
McCoy is stripped down by Matt O'Hanlon, the senior safety.
O'Hanlon is going to come off right here. Nobody picks him up. They actually show the blitz. And I think the confusion again, they're showing it and then dropping one guy right as the ball is snapped. O'Hanlon has had a great game tonight. Has had a great game. Eric Hag, Larry Asante, these safeties and their versatility has given this Texas front just a nightmare to deal with because of the different looks that they continue to give them.
So Texas decides to pooch punt it. They lined up like they might go for it, but they pooch punt it, and they pooch it all the way down to the 1 yard line.
Can I make an observation? Why is it when quarterbacks pooch punt it, they get it inside the 5 more times than normal punters do, and they get, let's say, 20 opportunities?
That's interesting.
Like,
I haven't really thought
of quarterback
that.
Might pooch punt 3 times a year if they do that, even, right?
Right.
And I feel like they always pin it.
Because I think, what was it, in the Missouri game in 97?
Corby Jones did
pooch
the same
punted
thing,
it and pinned.
Puts it to the 1. Like, I see this all the time, and it's like, well, obviously nobody usually is there to catch it. That helps. But, like, I don't know. I just feel like maybe they should let quarterbacks.
No, it's interesting. I have to chalk it up that you're basically just hitting it like a, you're punting a light line drive and letting it kind of roll down there, and so there's no one back there, so it's easier to do that. But at the same time, you're right. Like, most, I feel like Pooch punt success rate of pinning people inside the 10 is high.
I just want more pooch punch from quarterbacks. I watch it and I go, okay, that's, you know, it's one of those things I go, that's enough. I've seen too much, too many good pooch punts.
That's interesting.
I'm a pooch punt believer now.
That's an interesting observation because you're totally right. Right.
But I think quarterbacks are, they're athletes, you know, and they got good, you know, maybe these punters, punters hand-eye coordination and is not as good as
You do wonder if like, maybe you're better off when you're punting from like that no man's land range of where like we might go for it, we might not, of lining up with your quarterback and pooching it.
And you know,
I don't know.
And here's the other thing. Maybe this is crazy talk, but your quarterback's out there. He's comfortable. He's out there every snap. He's throwing the ball. He's like, so maybe he's just more comfortable being like, yeah, I'm just going to kick it right there.
Right.
Where a punter comes out, he's like, oh, Joe crap. Oh, God. I hope I catch this ball. Whoa, that was fast. Whoa, that was high. Here comes the rush.
I just picture anytime they cut to the punter on the bench, I feel like he's reading Harry Potter, and it's like, he's just like, oh, you guys need me? You need
Bah,
me
you're out there. Go kick one, Bah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. But you're right. You're totally right at this point.
Let me finish the chapter. Okay.
Hold on. Harry said to Lord Voldemort, not today. Okay, I'm ready to punt. All right. That's pretty much what's happening here.
I don't know.
God. Okay, so pooch punt inside the one. This is where it's hard. I said Cody Green is warming up. Here comes Cody Green.
On the half-yard line.
Impossible situation for him. I've wondered from a coaching perspective, I feel like you've kind of committed to like, hey, we're pulling Zach Lee here, we're bringing in Cody. I wonder if you could kind of like...
Can't go back?
You can't go back.
Because he probably made the decision before the punt, like, Cody, you're up, Zach, you're...
Cody, warm you're up, you're going in next series.
So then you're pinned at the one. What does it tell Cody if you say, hold on?
Actually, hold on just one second. Let's just wait.
Zach,
wait a second.
We trust you more. You go in.
So Cody Green comes in, like you said, at like the one-inch line. And Cody Green has to run two quarterback sneaks, and then he throws an incomplete pass on third down.
But you could tell that pass was... Nobody in the arena felt comfortable about that drop back. Like, it was like, you're like, don't take this sack and don't throw a pick. And it was that throw was like, ooh.
This sounds bad given the type of day that Lee and the offenses had, but the way Green threw the one pass, you kind of thought to yourself, like, yeah, you probably need to go back to Zach Lee.
And they did.
So that's Green's day. I do feel bad because maybe in another scenario, Green could have provided, because Green was a better runner than Zach Lee.
Yes.
Like, maybe Cody Green could have provided some spark, but it's just the football gods were anti
Cody Green that night. So that thought right there, bring that back up later when we finish this
okay.
thing. That was one of my points I wanted to take away from this.
So the brass has to punt from their own end zone, and they punt. Again, good field position. This whole third quarter was played on one set. Like, Texas was dominating field position in the third quarter. So they get it at the Nebraska 45. Nebraska forces a three and out again, big time defense. And what do they do again? Pooch punt. They pooch punt it again. The guy who was covering it, like, he could have let it roll into like the, I don't know if you saw that. He could have let it roll to the one. For some reason, he like panicked, like, yeah, the ball was going to like run around him, and he stopped it down it at the six. So Nebraska puts Zach Lee back in, ball at the six. Now all of a sudden, this is where Nebraska started to look a little sloppy. False start, backs Nebraska up to the 3-yard line. False start, Nebraska backed up to the 1-yard line. So then Nebraska has to do basically the same thing where they're just running a couple of quarterback sneaks and dives to give them some room to punt once again. Texas gets the ball, good field position again, at about midfield. First play was the first time I felt like in the chess match between coordinators that I thought Texas schemed Nebraska. They had a great misdirection quarterback draw with Colt McCoy. He has a big gain running the ball. And then two plays later, Nebraska gets a pass interference on Prince Amukamara that what I thought was a shaky call. Pelini thought the ball was uncatchable.
He was the guy was running out of bounds, I thought, so.
Yes, but so another pass interference that gets Texas down a little bit further. Nebraska finally stops him, but here comes Hunter Lawrence, the kicker for Texas, who's a really good kicker, by the way. He bangs a 39-yard field goal. Good. Texas is up 10-6. So Texas kicks off, and Niles Paul has a really good kickoff return, a 43-yard kickoff return that gets the ball near midfield. They pick up a first down, their first down since the first quarter on a little comeback route from Lee to Brandon Kinney for 13 yards. So think about it. We're late in the third quarter, and it's their Nebraska's first down since early first quarter. Unbelievable, right?
It's hard to believe we couldn't manufacture any sort of even gimmicks to just to move the chains, keep the ball in our hand.
And maybe you don't want to do trickery when you got such a good defense, but were you surprised? Nebraska never tried any trickery. I thought that was interesting. No halfback pass, nothing. Rewatching, I was like, God, at some point, you'd have to imagine they felt like they had to get gimmicky to try and move it. But anyway, so they pick up their first down since the first quarter, but eventually Nebraska gets stuffed and they have to punt. But the reason I wanted to bring up that drive, at least Nebraska finally flipped the field.
Yeah.
At least Nebraska got out from the shadow of their own end zone and were able to punt, and they pinned Texas at their own 10-yard line. So now the field got flipped, which that changes things. But so here comes the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter starting. Texas is up 10-6. Texas, like I said, penned at their own 10-yard line. There's another pass interference on Eric Hag where he didn't turn around, 15-yard penalty. I will say this was, again, this was probably the only, we talked about the blown assignments. Nebraska caught a break here where there was, I think, Dennard blew a bit on a double move, but a Texas wide receiver along the Texas sidelines is wide open and drops a pass. It was the only blown play from the defense. But then it gets to be third and long, of course. Ndamukong Suh sacks Colt McCoy. The front four pressure is big time. And then Texas, while they're punting, false starts, backs them up even more. So now they're punting. Yeah. And here comes a huge play in this game. I always say that there's always a couple plays I forget about. Texas punts. Niles Paul has a huge punt return.
Tucker standing back in the Texas end zone. Paul waits near midfield. Tucker booms one. Paul's got it. Good field position coming up. 30, 25, punter to beat. Stretches free, still going. And it'll be first and goal for Nebraska.
Now it's Paul, 43-yard punt return. And who tackles him? Kind of the punter gets him.
Punter gets him.
He could have scored. And in fact, I think he should have scored.
Well, he needed to score. Not because he made a mistake on the play. It would have been hard to score. We needed him to score because we just...
You knew the offense wasn't going to be able to score.
We can't score.
Niles Paul burst through, and you have to find a way to get in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, Niles Paul was our offense with kickoff and punt return.
Yes.
That was
the
it.
Only thing Nebraska had done in the second half was a kickoff return and now this punt return. I mean, it's unbelievable. Niles Paul gets kind of stopped by the punter, and the punter was one of those tackles where he stopped him and like held on to him a little bit, and then other guys came and got him down. But the ball gets, he returns it all the way to the 10-yard line. So Nebraska's offense comes out first and goal at the 10, 12 minutes and 55 seconds left, fourth quarter. Three and out.
I mean, gosh.
I mean, you're sitting there like one time. I'm rewatching. I'm like, just one time.
Give me your best play and get in that end zone.
Give me something. Give me one broken tackle, one nice diagram play to free up. Give me one, just one time. All right, let's take a quick break to talk about my good friends at Runza. Boy, did this last read explode on social media, because I have let you into a top secret menu item that has really blown everybody's mind. Did you know at Runza, you can get anything on a Runza sandwich? Like, I love a cheese runza, but if I wanted to, I could get pickles on it or mustard. I could put some more onions in that bad boy. I could put some fries in there. It's anything in the kitchen within reason you can ask for, and they'll add it. Again, I'm a cheese runza guy, but next time I stop in, I think I'm going to throw some pepper jack cheese on that bad boy. Maybe even some French fries on it as well. I mean, you can do whatever you want within reason because every runza is made to order. They all start as an original with no toppings, and they can add the toppings when you order, and boom, you got a custom runza sandwich. You can't beat it. So that's, once again, the super secret menu item from my friends at Runza. The build your own runza. Get into Runza today. Get one that's just for you and tell them Nick Baugh sent you. And while we're here, let's talk about Pella Windows and Doors. Here's the thing. Putting in some new windows or a new door, it's really exciting, but sometimes you don't even know where to begin. Let me help you out. First of all, you got to go with Pella. That's obvious. And with going with Pella, there are a couple of directions you can go to start. You can schedule a free in-home consultation. That's right, free. You'll get a Pella expert out to sit down with you, look at your home, and they're going to be able to get a Tom Osborne-esque game plan for you that fits your budget, your wants, and your needs. That's one option. Or option number two, you can head out to the showroom. The showroom is really cool. Sometimes it actually helps you kind of see the window or see the door, feel it, open it, close it to get a better feel of exactly what you're putting into your home. So the showroom is also a great place to start as well. Any direction you go to start, just know that Pella can 100% provide window and door solutions to any home. Check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Back to the podcast.
That's just where we had to have something to manufacture points. And for some reason, we just couldn't and wouldn't do it.
Like, no.
We wouldn't try something and we couldn't do it.
Ugh. Brutal. So they run Rex Burkhead in two very uncreative plays to start. They get stuffed twice. Then they run a fade to Brandon Kinney, where Brandon Kinney catches it, but he's two feet out of bounds. But here comes Alex Henry, 28-yard field goal. It's a layup for him. Good. Texas is up 10-9 with 11.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Big mental blunder coming up here for Texas. Nebraska kicks off. A freshman kickoff returner for Texas catches it at the 1 yard line and kind of bobbles it and slips and falls down while holding the ball. So the ball is downed at the 1 yard line. So here comes Nebraska. On second down, the Texas running back makes an all-world play to not have it be a safety by Sue.
Oh, yeah.
Sue gets great penetration, tackles him. I mean, this running back, unbelievable play just to get out of the end zone.
Yeah, but Sue just wouldn't be denied. And I think we should point out to the people who haven't, like I said, we always want you to go back and watch the game. But for those who have not, understand that it has been a slow and steady buildup where all Herb Street and Musburger are talking about is Sue.
Is Sue.
Every play is Sue. Sue is dominating this game, basically from start to finish, where whether he's I think at this point he's had 3.5 sacks, like 12 tackles and, you know, a bunch of TFLs and hurries and knocked. I mean, he's had a career's worth of stats.
A season's worth of stats. A great season in one game.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope we're doing a job. Like, he is, you can, sometimes it's hard unless you're a quarterback for you to have your presence felt on every play. You could feel, Sue was involved like in every defensive play. Like in what, he flushed a guy, he got penetration, he blew this up, it felt like every play Sue was making out. Even you could hear the crowd, the amount of Sue.
The Sue, yeah.
The Sue you heard like seemingly after every play.
First down and 10, and McCoy's going to put it back up on first down. Couldn't find a receiver. Sue closing in from the backside. There is the champ. Sue and his buddy Crick. From the 31. Colt kept it. And Sue threw him for a loss of a yard. And Dominican Sue, who's going to pick up a lot of hardware. Undoubtedly, he's the leader in all the categories for Defensive Player of the Year.
Well, he fights right through Chris Hall, and he doesn't give up on the play. Look at him. He's fighting off Chris Hall with his left arm, and he wraps up Colt McCoy with his right arm. Look at him fighting off. He's being held, and he still has that right arm with a clothesline to bring in poor Colt McCoy.
Here's the handoff. Newton trying to stretch the defense. Second down and 23. And McCoy back, going to throw, and has to take off. Receivers recovered, and he is thrown down by Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong is dominating. Wow.
I mean, it really was incredible to watch him control that game. And, you know, he had the ability where he was strong enough to go through anybody. He was fast enough to run things down, but he was also smart enough, and he had like a linebacker's mentality where sometimes he would just,
yeah,
he would take a count, look around, and then go, I'm going this way and I'm handling you how I want. But he was always analyzing the situation, and it was like unique in the way he did things. He wasn't just like, you know, point and go. It was like, I'm gonna analyze and dissect this and then go make my play and then just, you know, clobber people. But he was handling everybody.
Well, yeah, because the other all-time great defensive lineman we've talked about on this podcast was Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp had one gear, just
get up the field
and get up the field.
Get
right?
up the field and then go chase down the ball. Like
bull rush.
Yeah.
Like
he was Sue, more classic D-line.
Yes, yeah, Sue, you're right. Sue would bull rush. Sue would sometimes hit and diagnose. Sometimes, like, it was amazing to watch him operate.
What he had was what I would call is he has a feel. He has a feel when the screen's coming. He has a feel when the trap's coming. He has a feel when now's my time to actually penetrate. This is my time to sit back. Or this is the time that I, you know, he just had a feel. Like that's an instinct thing that
incredible.
Comes with just naturally having the instinct and two, like being smart enough to recognize things. And Sue's a really smart guy that you don't usually equate that with defensive alignment.
Right. Because usually it's fairly simple. Just see, you know, just set hut, get off the ball, blow it up.
Go
you know,
kill
like
it, right?
he, yeah, incredible. But the guy, but I wanted to point out the running back makes an unbelievable play for it to not be a safety.
For sure.
But then Colt McCoy here is money for a stretch. Huge third down pickup. Colt McCoy to his boy Jordan Shipley for 15 yards. Then Colt McCoy has another 16 yard pickup through the air. And I mean, these guys are well covered. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're running wide open. He's making good plays, and he's finding some talented wide receivers. Then there's another good throw. McCoy hits Malcolm Williams for a 20-yard gain. So now they're driving all the way to midfield. And then Dejon Gomes, for as much as we just talked about Sue, I'm not so sure Gomes' play isn't the most unbelievable play of the game.
Oh, yeah. It was a great play.
On first down, Colt McCoy is trying to hit a Texas receiver over the middle. And Dejon Gomes somehow, as the Texas guy is trying to catch it, Gomes reaches in with one hand, and as he's kind of spinning off him, snatches it from him for an interception when it looked like Texas was going to like run the clock out or at least go get points and score and end the game. And Gomes makes an all-world play.
Third down again for McCoy and the Longhorns. 5 yards short of the first down and taken away by Gomes. Gomes has got it. Intercepted. What a play by Gomes. It looked like Buckner had the catch and Gomes took it away.
Unbelievable effort here by Gomes.
But that's that was the signature of this defense is you had so many guys that were playmakers. You had Haig, Amukamara, Gomes, O'Hanlon, Sue, Turner. I mean, you had guys that were all just very
making
skilled.
Plays.
They were all skilled. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, they were all good at football, which that's what I think was very unique about that defense. They all had skill.
I hope everybody's watching this because I think it's important to watch these games in preparation for watching Nebraska now because I always talk about this, we fool ourselves into talking certain guys into being really good players just because they're playing now.
Yeah.
Like, Watch the 94 game. Watch the 83 game. Watch the 1997 Huskers. Watch the 2009 defense. Like, these are players.
Yeah.
These are ballers that are making... I mean, Gomes, not Sue, not Prince, not... Gomes comes up with an all-world play when his team needed it in the Big 12 championship game. Incredible pick. So Nebraska gets the ball back. 4 minutes and 56 seconds left, down 10-9.
Can we put a drive together, Nick?
Here we go. First play. Woo. Zach Lee, zone read, right up the middle. 17-yard pickup. In fact, it was the longest run from scrimmage for the game for Nebraska. Then, on third and four, Brandon Kinney, another little comeback route. Gain of 16. First down all the way to the Texas 30-yard line. Holy bleep.
We're doing it.
It's happening.
We're doing it.
It's happening. Under 3 minutes left. In fact, Mac Brown has to start calling timeouts. Mm-hmm. You pan to the sideline. Who's warming up at the kicker net? Alex Automatic Henry. At this point, you're feeling pretty damn good about this.
Yeah.
So Nebraska intelligently is just running the ball. And even on third down, they just hand the ball to Rex and get it right in the middle of the field. And Mac Brown has to call it another timeout.
Well, and think about, like, compare to our kicking situation this year with Nebraska, where
you just had to get inside 50.
Yeah,
and you were this is good.
They're at, like, the 30, and they're talking, like, oh, they're just getting the middle of the field. Like, we wouldn't even kick a field goal this last year if we weren't inside the, like, 15.
Right. So Burkhead gets to the middle of the field on third down, sets up a 43-yard field goal from Alex Henry, who just booms it dead down the uprights.
He strikes it.
It's good, and Nebraska leads Texas 12-10 with 1 minute and 44 seconds left.
43-yarder. On its way, he's got it. Nebraska takes the lead. We are a minute 44 away from BCS chaos.
With the black shirts.
With
waiting.
With Sue putting his helmet back on. The level of confidence is high. And let me tell you, the level of confidence plummets in just two plays. Here comes Nebraska's kickoff team. Adi Kanalik makes one of the biggest mental blunders of the game.
And Adi's a great guy. We love Adi, but
Adi Kanalik, his kickoff, he hooks it left, and it goes out of bounds. So Texas gets the ball at the 40-yard line with a minute 44 to go with Colt McCoy. They have a great field goal kicker. Oh, boy. Okay, everybody calm down. Everybody calm down, right? Well, here comes Colt McCoy. First play hits Jordan Shipley for a 19-yard gain, and Larry Asante gets flagged for a horse collar tackle, which it is. I mean, like it or not, it was clear as day, horse collar tackle. Here comes the flag, 15-yard penalty, a total gain of 34 yards down to the Nebraska 31. So just a few minutes ago, everybody was feeling fantastic.
Two plays
later, kickoff out of bounds, horse collar penalty. Texas has the ball at the 31.
And at this point, if you're a Nebraska fan, your stomach is starting to not feel well.
That's the biggest understatement in the world. Nebraska then stuffs Texas on two plays. Do a good job rattling McCoy. They get him to lose 3 yards on two plays. And then here comes the play.
Well, it was very... Here's what's interesting. Texas had a timeout.
I was just going to... I want to talk... Before we get to the you know, what happened with 1 second, like, rewatching it, I didn't remember that... I'm not sure what Texas was doing. They had a timeout left, and Mac Brown decided to let the clock just run. So it's 3rd and 13. They are letting the clock run.
Yeah, so that here's what's hard is, you know, you're in that situation where it's third down, you want to kick the you got to kick a field goal, right? So you can't take the timeout too early because you don't want to risk a pass where you get a sack, you can't run it because the clock will run, right? So, like, if you take the timeout early, you can't run the ball. But if you don't take the timeout, you either have to run it quick.
That's what I would have done. I'd have gotten on the ball and just run it quick.
I think there was that, whatever the reason, they slow played it and, you know, ran the sprint out where it was probably throw it near the sideline or throw it out of bounds. But it was really weird to see that. I mean, they maybe snapped it with like six seconds. 6 seconds they snapped.
So that's what they Mac Brown and Colt McCoy decided to let the clock run to where they don't snap the ball until there's 6 seconds left.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been let's get 4 yards to help with the kicking this field goal. But at that point, don't you run it down to two and take
and just
the
call
timeout?
That's what rewatching it. It's just amazing what you almost have PTSD where you omit certain details. Everybody just remembers the 1 second getting put back on. The circumstances that led to this play,
yeah,
are bizarre. I've never seen this in any other football game where a team had a timeout. They let the clock run, snap it with 6 seconds left, then Colt McCoy gets flushed and rolls to the right and holds onto the ball for probably too long, and then he airs it out of bounds, and it goes out of bounds. Clock expires. Clock goes to zero. Bo Pelini puts his arms up.
When Pelini's walking on, Nebraska's running onto the field.
The clock's ticking. Texas's offense trying to get organized here. Got one more play here before the field goal attempt. Better hurry up.
Third down and 13. Roll pocket right. Throw it out of bounds and stop the clock. Wait a minute. Did the game end? Nebraska thinks it's over. McCoy may have run the clock out. Mac thinks there's a second left. I thought there was a second left. I think Bo Pelini should settle down the Nebraska sideline. I think they can look at the clock in this situation. I thought there was a second.
The previous play is under further review.
They will look at the clock.
It's over.
And Bo Pelini's got his arms in the air. He's walking with the look in his eyes that we just won this game, right? We just won this game. But you can see the officials are blowing their whistles.
Immediately blowing the whistle and telling everybody to get back. And they immediately announced the previous play is under further review. And so, I guess, looking back on it now, is it when you – the thing I hate to say is review – when you if you look at the review, if the clock has to completely stop, the second the ball gets thrown out of bounds, the second it hits anything out of bounds, if the clock has to stop, there was 1 second left.
But here's my issue, okay? Here's my issue. My issue is this, and this is my issue with replay in general, is – you do things throughout the game a certain way. If that plays in the middle of the third quarter and they throw that, it takes a couple seconds to stop the clock.
Right.
Always. That's how you do it. It's not the millisecond the ball hits the ground, somebody's boom, going over and like, throwing seconds back. So if you don't do something a standard way, to do it differently at the end of the game, to me, I think that is a disservice to the game. Okay. And now, okay, you got replay. But I also think that's not in the spirit of the rule of replay where you get to decide when and where. We feel this is more important, so now we're going to just do this arbitrary decide where the clock should be. I don't want replay in general. I especially don't like it in a situation like that where, I mean, the game clock that we could see, the game's over. On a different clock they used, which may have been the official one, if you were actually timing up, there was truly 1 second.
Yes, I'm totally with you. If someone is holding the game clock, like acting like I'm holding a stopwatch.
Yeah.
And you are on that sideline and you got the game clock and you're watching the ball, and the second it hits the ground, you hit stop, there's 1 second left.
But that's not the spirit of how they do it ever. They never do it that way.
To your point, I bet if we went back and watched any pass throughout the game that
went
threw
out of bounds,
or just went incomplete or out of bounds or whatever, I guarantee you it wasn't as to the split second where it stops.
Never. It never is, except for a time when this rare situation. Like, these rare situations happen, and then they change their mind to give a team a chance to win a game instead of just like, I mean, the game's over.
I was amazed at how quickly the refs felt like they wanted to review it.
Because they didn't, you know.
You know, because obviously they cut to Mac Brown, and Mac Brown is immediately holding up one for 1 second. But it's like, yes. Of course, every coach is going to do that.
But here's what's hard to acknowledge is Colt McCoy in Texas, they made a mistake there. The way they handled the clock was a giant risk and a giant mistake, and they made that mistake, and they got rewarded for doing something dumb. That's the part that I go, it's a 50-50 whether there was a second left on that clock, and you are going to automatically give it to them when you made a mistake. Like I'm almost like, look, they made the mistake. Err on the side of that was stupid. Why would I reward you?
The biggest thing I forgot about that play was how bad and poor of a job Mac Brown and Colt McCoy did leading up to that play. It's unbelievable what they did. It's unbelievable.
They really lucked out.
Oh, big time. And I guess I'm just surprised at how quickly, you know, a lot of times, like, there are times refs want to just run off the field, right? Like if the clock, like the game ends, yeah. And like they just want to get off the field. I was surprised at how fast the refs immediately wanted to review it too.
Well, I think, you know, Colt McCoy, he can say what he wants, but if you're throwing that away, you should have thrown it right at a Nebraska player on the sideline.
Colt McCoy is...
Because it sailed in those extra few seconds, the ball sailed and it didn't touch anything, and it keeps going that extra second or two of sailing over the top and down. I'm telling you, I was frame by framing it, and on the main game clock, it was basically by the time you could register the ball had hit, it was saying zero. But then, like I said, they showed another clock that who knows what clock that was, that they called the official game clock. But the one that's the TV that you can rewind and look at, I mean. It's a zero to me.
It's an if there. I'll just say if 1 second doesn't get put back on the clock, it's an all time blunder for Mac Brown and Colt McCoy. That would have cost them a trip to the national championship at what was one of the most mismanaged situations late in a game from them.
Yeah,
it was horrible.
It reminded me of Magic Johnson. I think is the 84 finals where he dribbled
Tragic Johnson?
Yeah, yeah. They call him Tragic because he dribbled it out and didn't take a shot. And he just sort of lost his awareness of the game. And that to me was a little what happened. It was like, okay, they kind of had a direction, but it's like, did they not realize, like, you got to leave yourself 3 or 4 seconds? Like,
I mean, again, the why would they you, had a timeout.
And they had a timeout. Like,
it's yeah, unbelievable. I mean,
that decision making got rewarded too. And that's the part that I go. That really bothers me is like, look, this is a decision. That was to me, it's not a no-brainer. That's a decision the refs have to make.
Right.
And they just, for some reason, they were just like,
unbelievable.
Oh, this is yours. Yep, you get
so
it.
Throughout the review, they decided to put 1 second on the clock. Of course, Bo Pelini is ready to murder everybody, which I don't blame him. And Nebraska has a timeout left. They call it to ice the kicker. But here, Hunter Lawrence, 46-yard field goal, goes through the uprights.
No,
barely.
Squeaks
inside
in.
The left upright.
It was about a foot in. I mean, it was a squeaker. It just slid in.
Ball game. Texas wins the Big 12 championship 13-12.
Your 46-yarder. For everything. Got it. Texas goes to Pasadena.
I think we all had our hands on our head. I remember just being like, when you put your hands on your head because you don't know what else to do.
It was astonishing and devastating in the moment. Even rewatching it still is like, wow. Wow.
And that,
unreal.
And we'll get into what that means.
Yes.
I think it means a lot.
Couple of things with the box score real quick before we get into our final awards. So, I mean, Nebraska's quarterbacks for the day were 6 of 20 with 3 interceptions and and 39 yards. Exactly was 6 of 19, 39 yards through three picks. Nebraska had 67 total yard, had 67 yards rushing. Nebraska had 106 total yards. Nebraska only had 5 first downs for the entire game.
I mean, how many rushes did we have? Does it say how many rushes?
I had it. I clicked out of it.
Rushing. Helu had 10. Burkhead had 17. Lee had 6.
It was like 35 or something like that. 35 carries, 35
yeah,
attempts.
It looks like about, that looks about right. Yeah. So 10, 17, 20, yeah, 32. Okay. Yeah. So like 34-ish. But if you can't get 100 yards rushing on, you know, 30 or 40 carry, it's just like, what?
But they had 5 first downs for the game. They have 5 first downs and 106 total yards.
5 first downs.
For the whole game. Alex Henry was 4 for 4 field goals. Nebraska sacked Colt McCoy 9 times. Sacked Colt McCoy 9 times. Held Texas to 202 total yards. And Texas had 38 carries for 18 yards rushing.
Dang.
I mean, this was the kind of box score where you look at it if you're a defensive guy. At all the defensive stats, you're like, wow, what a game. And all the offensive stats are like, I need to go puke somewhere.
I know, but you know what? I mean, the difference is that 100 yards they had. I mean, another 100 yards, how do we not have a touchdown? That's the thing. All we need is another 100 yards, and I think that manufactures us one touchdown.
All right, should we get to the final awards?
Let's give them the awards.
Final awards brought to you by Allo. I've told you, I've made a lot of decisions in my life, a lot of bad ones, a lot of good ones. When I moved to Lincoln about a year ago, going with Allo for internet and TV, fantastic. What is it about Allo, Bo, that
Nick,
is good?
I'm telling you, I know this now. It's all about fiber.
It is the fiber, the all-fiber network in Lincoln and across the state, second to none. I'm telling you guys, the internet is incredible. The reliability, the speed, amazing. In my household, my daughter can be streaming something in one room. My wife can be streaming something in another room. I can be streaming something in another room, downloading a game, whatever. And everything is smooth. There's never a hiccup. And working from home, you better have some good internet if you're doing some Zoom meetings and all that stuff. So internet's never been more important. So make the switch. Go to allofiber.com. That's allofiber.com. And while you're there, tell them Nick Boss sent you so they know who sent you the Allo direction. Okay, my friend. Unsung hero. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first because you just gave it to me with the last one of your last stats. Alex Henry, 4 for 4. I didn't even think about that going to this game. And I'm
you
like,
take it for granted. That's what greatness is. You just took it for granted that Henry was not going
to
miss.
I mean, there's so many good defensive performances. I want to give it to one of the guys. But like 4 for 4, and they were not easy kicks. Like they were, some of them were difficult.
45, kicks. He was 4 for 4 from 45 yards, 52 yards, 28 yards, 42 yards.
I mean,
bruh, other than the 28 yarder, it's not like those are,
yeah,
are gimmies.
Yeah, so that was pretty impressive. So I'm going to go there.
That's where I wrote down to spread some love. I mean, you could have picked a lot of different guys on the defense. Dejon Gomes had 5 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, and his interception is an unbelievable play. Yeah. Prince also had a really good game as well. I thought Matt O'Hanlon had a good game.
O'Hanlon had a good game.
O'Hanlon had a big sack.
A great open field tackle.
I think it was in the first half. That's what's amazing is, yes, Sue had an all-world performance, but like there were multiple other dudes on the defense that had amazing games.
Everybody played well, and Sue played, I mean, the best game we've ever seen a defensive player play. I mean, it was unbelievable.
So there you go. So Alex Henry is probably our pick, but you got to give a little love to some other black shirts, and in particular, Dejon Gomes. Like his interception. That interception is one of the best plays, all things considered. Because the one thing I would have given, if Nebraska wins that game, they don't win that game without Dejon Gomes' play. I mean,
no, he had
to make a play late, and he did. All right, excited about this. Pop culture awards. Okay, people that listen to this know that we are obviously going nostalgic. Usually we're talking about movies from 1978 and from 83.
What were we doing in 09? What were we doing in 09?
Oh, we were partying. We were partying it up pretty good. But we were also watching some decent movies. Pretty sneaky decent year for movies in 2009. Avatar, The Hangover, a bunch of good ones. But we have selected two here. You want me to get things started?
Yeah, what's the first award?
A little movie called Taken came out in 2009, where Liam Neeson was very upset and on a revenge tour. And the reason we chose this is because this was like, it felt for the Nebraska fan base that the BCS, the Big 12, Texas, the referees, they had taken our trophy. So I have a very particular set of skills taken award goes to who here?
Well, it goes to...
I guess I gave it away.
Said that it's got to go to the Big 12 and the BCS together, right?
And the refs.
And the refs, because they took our game.
Yes.
They took it from us.
They flat... Like, Liam Neeson's daughter...
No, Nick, they kidnapped it. They kidnapped that.
Can you not
picture... It's our trophy.
Can you not...
Nick, it's our trophy.
Can you not picture Bo Pelini picking up the phone... and making the phone call that Liam Neeson made.
We can cut that in, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's cut it right here.
Right here. Can't you picture this phone call? Bo Pelini to the BCS, the Big 12, and the refs? Exactly.
There you go.
I will hunt you down.
That's
how we all felt.
We were making phone calls.
I told you.
There was a kidnapping. And that kid was our title.
The trophy was taken. It was taken from Nebraska. Just like Liam Neeson's daughter was taken from him. I asked my wife this question earlier. Over under the amount of people Liam Neeson killed in pursuit of getting his daughter back, was it north of 25?
North of 25, less than 50 probably.
Think about that. I want, like someone one time actually did the stats of Rocky and all his fights, like versus Drago, like punches landed, all that stuff. Someone at one point gave Jimmy Chitwood's stat line and the Hoosiers. I want an official body count for the amount of people Liam Neeson killed in his pursuit of getting his daughter back.
Ooh, I wonder if that's...
That's got to be on the internet has an answer
like
for everything.
Some of the Rambo movies. And some of those movies, the kill counts, I feel like...
Jason Bourne probably killed a lot of people. Did Bond kill a lot of people?
Bond wasn't a volume guy. Rambo is a volume guy. Rambo is a volume score. Bond was way more of a
specialist. Okay, here's a question. Did James Bond... kill more people in all of his movies total or have sex more with
more sex
women?
Than killing. Bond was definitely
he wanted to kill one guy, then put on a tux, go get a martini, and take some chick home.
He looked for balance, but he usually skewed towards the ladies. So
but I'm telling you, Liam Neeson, dude, was killing. I mean, it's north of 25 people.
My wife went to Europe and her dad made her watch that before he went to Europe because dad's thing.
That was an eye-opener for everyone. You're like, whoa.
For every dad.
Oh, my God. Very particular set of skills. All right, that's the first pop culture award. I blew that one on him.
Yeah, you gave the answer before.
I'm sorry. I'm too excited about it. What do you got for me, brother?
All right, so my award's another movie from 2009. One of my all-time favorite actors, Clint Eastwood,
of course,
was in this movie. So, this is the award for the Gran Torino "Get Off My Lawn" award goes to who?
It's got to be Ndamukong Suh to Colt McCoy.
I knew it. Yes.
4.5 sacks and one. The emphatic, he literally was basically throwing Sue off of his lawn. The pocket was Sue's lawn, and he threw him off his lawn.
That I think that was the play I was thinking of, actually, that related to Gran Torino. So, yes, that's the Get Off My Lawn award.
Oh, that's just fantastic. I wish I could do a whole podcast of just picking movies from years and then bending them for awards for different things in sports.
Like,
that's fantastic. Taking Gran Torino, those are your pop culture awards. All right, you know, it's always hard to give an MVP in a losing game, but it's pretty freaking obvious who the MVP of this game
is. Easy one.
Ndamukong Suh. Here's his final stat line. 10 solo tackles, 2 assisted tackles for 12 total tackles. 6 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks.
That's unbelievable. That's a defensive tackle.
Think about that.
That's a really pretty good stat line if you have the inside linebacker and a defensive end having both good games, like career games for a couple guys. Like, that's awesome.
12 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks. And like a bunch of other near, like flushed Colt McCoy had, I mean, it was, you know, sometimes I was interested in watching this game, and it's funny when you watch these games, like, did things get embellished over time? You know, like, do we, like, you know, by, when we talk about it, like, Sue tackled, but they would Sue in 09. Sometimes, there are times you go back and you're like, that wasn't as good as I thought it was. His performance, and I would extrapolate it to the entire defense, the defensive performance from Sue and that entire crew was better than I remembered, and it was amazing in my mind before I sat down and rewatched it.
Yeah, Sue had, of his 12 tackles, 6 for loss, 4.5, like, call it 8 of those plays are signature highlight plays,
right,
that you would say for a career, you would be like, that makes my career highlight. You know, he's
over the course of 4 years,
clothesline tackle. He grabs McCoy and, like, slams him. He does the spin throw McCoy. He does the run McCoy down, drill him out of bounds, and about knock him out of the game. The almost safety, the chase. I mean, Nick, every play, right, was like a highlight, too.
Yes.
It wasn't just, hey, he made a little easy tackle. It was like, he did it with flair, with, like, oh, I mean, it was amazing.
The play that that was so cool was that in the first half, he's getting, like, double-teamed. He holds a guy off, and his shoulder pad is getting pulled all the way, so you can just see, you see a shoulder in his arm, and he one-hand tackles some dude and just brings him down with just one giant arm.
Yeah. He went superhuman that day, and I don't know that I've ever seen a better defensive game in my life. I really have.
I think it is, and that's why I said it in the open. I think it's the greatest individual defensive performance in Nebraska football history, and maybe college football history.
Well, let's think about this. So Sue was, there was rumblings this guy could be in the Heisman Trophy talk, but it was Ingram and Colt McCoy.
Toby Gerhart were the three guys, you know.
Yeah,
but really I feel like it was Ingram and McCoy.
It was Ingram and McCoy. And then Sue has that game, and specifically kind of does that to McCoy. And I think two things happen. Sue goes into the Heisman race now. And I think McCoy loses the Heisman because of this game. But in reality, if there weren't a bunch of biased Southern voters that wanted to give it to an SEC player. Mark Ingram had a very decent year with a great Alabama offensive line. But Sue had a season for the century. Like, it was that good. And that game should have won him the Heisman, in my opinion.
There, even though Mark Ingram won the Heisman, I think in the moment, and here even a decade removed, who was the most outstanding player in college football? Who was the best player in college football that season? It was Sue.
It's almost, if you look at getting robbed on Heisman trophies, there's been a few over the years. I think that might be the most egregious. Like, that one was obvious.
Right.
And the thing is, that game was before the Heisman Trophy, I believe before the vote even happened, right? So that game should have put him as the Heisman Trophy winner because, like you said, Herb Street and Musburger, they talked about him all game long, and he didn't deliver. He gave the game of this, like, of a defensive player of this century, in my opinion.
I totally agree.
Which is like, doesn't that give you the Heisman?
I would think so. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I thought the dude was all-world good. I thought it was an all-world performance. Upon rewatching it, he was even better than I remembered.
It's as good as you can do.
Okay, as we wrap this up, legacy of this game. There's a lot to unpack on this. Do you want me to start?
Get going. I need to think some more here.
I think the legacy of this game is, I think when it comes right down to it, this is the ultimate butterfly effect turning point in Bo Pelini's career as head coach at Nebraska. There are moments that you can reflect on that if the outcome is different, maybe everything after that goes different. And the butterfly effect for Bo in this game is huge. I think the toxic nature, the climate around Bo, the climate around the program all changes if they don't put 1 second back on that clock and Nebraska wins. It gives them a conference title, which they hadn't had in a decade. They beat Texas, who everybody hated. And I then think they are more apt to handle everything that followed better. Like, remember in 2010, they put way too much into the Texas regular season game.
Yeah.
And they lose to Texas in Lincoln in 2010. I think they'd have been more apt to win the 2010 Big 12 championship game.
The monkey's off their back.
When the monkey's off your back, when you win one, it's funny how you're just the it's you relax. Like T.O., he finally wins in 94, so he wins in 95. You know, and he should have won in 96 and then wins in 97. No, like, you sometimes you just got to win one. Now, the counter to that is Bo Pelini kind of is who he is. He always was going to be combustible and not handle the fishbowl overly well at a place like Nebraska. But I just think a lot of that stuff calms down a bit if you hang a conference championship banner.
Exactly. Right?
So I think it's, I think the biggest legacy of this game is, I think 1 second changes the course of Bo's tenure at Nebraska.
I think that's very fair because, like you're talking about, Bo Pelini got on the bad side when he started getting criticized badly, right? Like, he started get into it, the media, and then after Osborne left, the administration. Because Osborne and him would always see eye to eye, right? And Ozzie's going to take care of his coach. If Bo Pelini wins the title, and then probably wins another one the next year, how quick are people going to be to criticize him?
Not very.
The media is going to give him, I mean, when they wait a decade, they'll probably give him another decade, right? They're going
to
be better.
If he wins one or wins back to back, you're not writing that column. I'm not coming on the radio and giving that hot take.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's just not happening.
Instead of the guy that can't win and here's why, it's like he can win if he's got players and he turned a program that was falling like on its face around that quickly. I mean, the story's different, and I think Pelini's attitude never has to go on the defensive. He can be himself, his best self, which is like when he's not having to fight the outside. He can just be a football coach. That's when he's great.
I totally agree.
When he's coaching football, the dude's unbelievable. But like when you make him have to fight people accusing him, it's not his strength.
And this is a reality of life that, like, the more as fair or not, the more success you have, the more people are willing to overlook certain things. Yeah. So some of the sideline behavior, blowing up on refs, all that stuff, you're less apt to get upset about that if you're the fans or correlate that with performance if you have a championship banner or two.
And maybe Bo, like, you saw Tom Osborne in 1978, right?
Right.
Like, a rare time where he got emotional.
Animated, yep.
Like, Ozzie in 1994, by that time he'd won. He won a bunch of conference titles and things, and you know, he hadn't won a national title, but like, he was stoic by then. Like, there's something to winning that calms everybody. It would help Pelini recruit. All these things are good. And once again, it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda that we like to. Part of the fun of going back is I actually like kind of going through that exercise.
But that's what I think. That's the main legacy of this. The legacy of this game is the 1 second getting put back on the clock, I think, alters Pelini's career at Nebraska.
I guess the only other takeaway would be, you know, Taylor Martinez and being able to just be explosive with running the ball. I think that game, they were going to go with Martinez immediately. Like,
great point.
You know what I'm saying?
I guess the thing that's amazing is, like, with largely the same cast of characters, but you just insert Martinez, and that offense the next year was pretty electric at times. Now, it had a few moments where Taylor was still young and couldn't throw and all that stuff, but, like, You're right. I think that game made Bo go, we have to do something different at quarterback.
Yeah, we can't do games. You know, we can't just manage games anymore. We need to have
a playmaker.
Yeah, there. And I think he specifically wants somebody that can run the ball, like a playmaker that can run, that's fast and can run that ball. Like,
the other lasting legacy of this game, the other, is I do believe, right or wrong, I think what unfolded in that game helped continue the erosion of Nebraska and the Big 12. And it helped continue to pour gasoline and fuel on the fire of the anger towards Texas, which all ultimately led to Nebraska being open to going to the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
So I also think it was, now there's a law, it's just like anything else, it's never just one thing. But I think this was one of the moments that people think about.
I got a question for you. Yeah. We win in 09 and maybe we win in 010. Do we stay in the Big 12?
Well, because here's what's tough about that is Nebraska had already, it was already understood that they were going to go to the Big. Remember, they played the entire 2010 season, which with understanding that it was pretty much
in 10. So,
because remember, that's the whole, that was their whole thought. Remember at Texas A&M that they thought the Big 12 was trying to screw them and they had 13 penalties or whatever. Yep. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
if they went on, if they win 9-09,
I don't think so. I don't think so because I still think people have to remember there were so many rumblings going on that Texas was going to go independent. Yep. There was a lot of people that thought the Big 12 was just going to crumble.
Yeah.
So I think I think more so than anything, Nebraska felt like they were on, the Big 12 was a sinking ship, and the Big 10 lifeboat came, and they jumped onto that because they thought, I mean, in 2010, if you would have told me, will the Big 12 conference be around in 2020, I'd have said no.
It was looking like that.
Because Texas was flirting with going to the Pac-12, independent, or the SEC. Missouri goes to the SEC. Colorado's going to the Pac-12. It looked like
A&M, yeah.
It looked like it was falling apart. So I think for as much, it's like I said, it's never just one thing. So to answer your question, I don't think so, but I guess it all these things add up, you know? They all add up. But that's, there's a lot in that game. There's a lot in that game. And I know some people, like I tweeted out through to this game, like, oh my God, why are you doing this game? I'm like, I think you can't tell the story of Nebraska football without this game.
Oh yeah.
Like if you and I start teaching a class at UNL called Nebraska Football History 120, it's pass fail. We're going to help you out. But
grade on a curve.
We're going to grade on a curve. But honestly, I would have this game in there. I think it's important in the arc of understanding what the tale that is Nebraska football.
I think part of our with this Husker Classics is these are the games we talk about the most.
Yep.
And that's the truth. Like sometimes you talk about the losses as much as you talk about the wins. And so I think we're going to have more wins on Husker Classics.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not going to avoid talking about the big losses because they're just as important.
100%. So there you go. Husker Classic recaps, 2009 Big 12 championship, Texas on a last-second field goal. Bo's doing the hook 'em horns down. You still anti-Texas? We're all still anti-Texas, right?
Never forget, people. Never forget.
13-12 on a last-second field goal. Somewhere we need Liam Neeson to go after the Big 12. All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet, great burgers, cheese Runza, delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.